Hello to everyone listening. This is Dr. Kathy Forty, and this is October 12th, 2015. Today I have with me the author and a telepath clairvoyant, E.M. Nicolai, and he's had over 20 years of telepathic work with seventh dimensional entities that they identify themselves as Samuel. He's also an author of the Essence Path books. There's four in the series, and the one that I really loved was The System Lords and the 12 Dimensions, and the one that he's just releasing now is Timeline Collapse, The Future of Third Dimensional Earth and Fifth Dimensional Terra. And the reason I had Gene on today is 5 years ago, Gene told me that the next World War III, the War of All Wars, I guess as prophecy has always said, would be fought in Syria. And I kind of kept that under my hat because at the time there didn't seem to be too much happening in Syria. But not too long after that, there was the President Assad got accused by Western powers of using chemical weapons to on his own people. And this was erroneous, of course, and later found out to be erroneous. And Russia came in and saved the day and averted the U.S. from going to war with Syria. And I thought, oh, phew, good. You know, we've averted that World War II prophecy or World War III prophecy that Gene talked about. But now with things, you know, really igniting in Syria, I thought it was time to bring him back, especially since his new book, The Timeline Collapse, has a timeline of prophecies from now until the year 2569, which is quite substantial. So welcome, Gene.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You always have interesting stuff to share, and always an insightful look at it. I'd say more deeper than I've ever come across with, you know, other telepaths and clairvoyants. And what do you actually call yourself, a telepath, a clairvoyant, a trance medium?
You know,
what's the best way to describe yourself?
You know, although I have instances of doing all of the above, I actually just refer to myself as an intuitive.
Okay. All right. Okay.
That's, yeah.
But you seem to have this specialty in world events, and I know, you know, you try to fly low under the radar because I know that, you know, you've had, you know, powers that be look into what you're predicting in the past, and so we'll try not to get you in too much trouble here because a lot of your predictions have turned to be true. So tell us,
well,
what is going
I've
on?
Been, the story is that in my past, I have been approached by certain entities, governmental in nature, asking me to do what I do for them. Refusing them is not an easy thing to do. So at that particular point, you're kind of watched all the time and followed. And it gets more in-depth, but I don't want to talk about it right now. But just suffice to say that this is something that I have done with really thousands of people, working with thousands of people, working with organizations, working with businesses, and to an extent even with governments in terms of looking at probable futures, in terms especially of looking at the reason why things are happening the way they're happening from a higher perspective and from the perspective of the soul. So
right.
The Essence Path series that we've created is really about helping people to understand exactly what's happening and why it's actually happening, because everything is an opportunity for soul growth, even things that are seemingly negative, even things that are sometimes incomprehensible. There usually, in fact, there always is a reason that is related to higher growth and a spiritual reason that it's related to.
So that brings us to where are we right now?
well, we're definitely in an interesting time.
And I know, and everybody, everywhere you read, people are talking about, you know, either, you know, biblical prophecies or Nostradamus prophecies or Quran prophecies or even Edgar Cayce prophecies, all about this war that is on the horizon. And is there any way of averting it? And what's this all about?
Well, this is really the reason why we actually took on writing the book beginning about 5 years ago. And when I first spoke with you and when I was mentioning that World War III, we were actually talking at that particular point about events that were taking place in Egypt. And I told you at that time, I think I remember, that, well, you know, it's not a good situation, but it's not the one that you have to worry about. And that you really need to worry
about. Just to back up a little bit, I was supposed to go to Egypt in February 2011, and Gene had told me beforehand. He said, it looks like there's going to be some type of unrest in that area. It doesn't look like you're probably going to make it to that area. And take out good travel insurance. So I did. And 2 weeks before I left, Egypt erupted in chaos in Tahrir Square. So you were absolutely right on.
Yeah, and at the time, then what we were talking about also is I said what you really need to pay attention to is what is going to be occurring in Syria, because what comes out of that will spill over into first, it'll spill over into Iraq, it'll spill over into Lebanon, and ultimately will engulf the entire Middle East, as well as a good part of the world. In what people really, or what will become known as World War III and the Great War. But to back up for a second, what we've really tried to do, and the reason why we really ventured into this particular book, is not to give prophecy and not to give predictions. It was really an effort to explain, why things are actually transpiring and why things take place the way that they take place. Now, the philosophy behind Essence Path is that by being on your Essence Path, meaning being connected to your soul, you have the ability to understand life, you have the ability to create and manifest the life that you truly were intended to have, and moreover, understand exactly what is happening to you. And you have the ability to actually create it in the positive sense and experience it in a positive way, or you have the ability to experience it in more challenging, negative ways. Your higher self is really unconcerned about good, bad, right, or wrong, and just knows that you really wanted to work on these particular issues. And whether you work on it from a positive standpoint or from a negative standpoint is really totally up to you, but by becoming conscious and becoming aware of your essence path and of your soul's journey and what you're all about, you're able to steer your manifestations to the positive polarity and experience your life mission and what happens to you from the positive aspects. So that's the basis of what we've tried to do. Now, the interesting thing about Timeline Collapse, which is the new book, there has been in the world, and you've noticed it, a very great shift between almost what you would call people who are rigidly, almost childishly fundamental in their views, and people who are really more enlightened in a sense, who want to just be let live and let live and sort of be left alone.
How true.
And this is not accidental by any means. And when we investigated actually what was happening, we discovered that through the means of ascension, which is something we talk about a lot in the Essence Path series, a lot of souls who are incarnated or have had incarnations on Earth are going to be transcending, and their souls are going to begin incarnations on a higher dimensional plane. Now, that doesn't mean that people are going to float off in the sky. The rapture thing is totally misunderstood. What it means is that as we finish up lifetimes over the course of the coming roughly 200 to 300 years, souls that have been on this journey in a third dimensional environment on Earth for millennia will begin the process of cycling off, and they are termed to be harvestable, and they will start to ascend and to start incarnations on a fifth dimensional version of Earth, which essentially is Earth in the fifth dimension, which is known as the planet Terra. Now, on the other hand, there are those individuals, those souls, who are, let's say, young souls, much younger, who have really just begun their journey in the third dimension. Those souls will continue to incarnate in the third dimension for as long as they are able, and they have a distinct difference in that they're going to continue on in the third dimension and will ultimately be joined by other souls who are coming from lower dimensions and incarnating for the first time in the third dimension, whereas those who are older souls will begin to cycle off, and they will be harvestable, and they will then move on to incarnations in the fifth dimension.
When you say cycled off, do you mean...
cycling off meaning that the cycle of incarnations will end in this particular dimension.
Got it.
So they will cycle off and begin incarnations in another dimension. So what we've tried to do, though, is we've tried to understand, well, what is happening with the third dimensional timeline? Because the third dimensional timeline is in the process of evolution, which is really ascension is the universal process of evolution. And the timeline is collapsing and being replaced by the new third dimensional timeline as those fourth dimensional souls are ending up lifetimes in this particular dimension and getting ready to move on to the next dimension. So what is essentially a misunderstood, the whole concept of Armageddon is a little bit misunderstood from our perspective, because it really is, it is the end of a world, but it is not the end of Earth, and it's not the end of the third dimension. It's the end of this particular timeline, and it's the end of cycles of incarnation for what I would almost say is at least half, if not more, of the current soul population who are having incarnations in the third dimension. And what we've tried to do then is we've tried to show what now will transpire on this collapsing third dimensional timeline in terms of predictions, in terms of things that are coming up. And then in the second part of the book, we've tried to show, well, what is Terra, and what is the fifth dimension, and what is fifth dimensional life all about for those people who, or those souls, I should say, who are going to now be beginning incarnations in a fifth dimensional environment. And the reason why you see such a rift happening between groups of people, really in our country and around the world, is related to those individuals, those souls, who wish to continue on in third dimensional lifetimes because of the need for growth, because of the preference for karma, the preference for balancing out energy, and those souls that are actually going to be finishing up cycles of lifetimes in the third dimension and moving on to the fifth dimension. And that's really the purpose of what we tried to show. And of course, as part of that is what we have been talking about, you and I. A great part of that is related to what is going to transpire with respect to the Middle East and what's coming up and what's on the timeline and essentially what is in the future of third dimensional Earth.
And is it fluid? Is it constantly changing? Or is there the high probability of some of these things being set in stone of what is going to happen?
Yeah, time is always shifting. and time, and this is really one of the reasons why, for someone who is a remote viewer or who is an intuitive or clairvoyant, it becomes very difficult, because generally what they're seeing is they're seeing the most probable outcome, and they're seeing the probable future. But because the timeline is actually a spiral, and a time wave that is a spiral, and I should back up and say that the dimension is actually what defines the time wave, and the time wave defines a specific dimension. And that wave happens in a spiral, and thus there are different points on the timeline that are related to each other. And those points tend, in terms of our understanding, when we look at it in a linear fashion, tend to be thousands of years different, maybe even tens of thousands of years different. But that's the reason why you can have something that happens in Atlantis, say, 100,000 years ago, can have a reference point because of the spiral that is actually related to something happening today. Or something that happened in Rome is sort of replaying itself in a karmic way today. So because of that, the timeline is always shifting. And something that is happening can't be measured in a linear way. And what happens on one part of the time wave can actually change and alter what happens in another part of the time wave. And that not only works into the future, but it works backwards and forwards. So that something that happens in the future can actually change something that happens in the past, just as something that happens in the past can change something that happens in the future. Now, more often than not, what happens is there's a shifting in the time measurement. Now, we, because we're in the third dimension, and we have to measure time, and we have a certain measurement that we've created. We experience time as happening in a linear fashion. But that's not really how it happens, because time is always shifting back and forth. And because something that happened in the past can change something that happened in the future, what a remote viewer and intuitive might see as happening in, say, 2050, one day, 3 years later, 5 years later, could actually be that same thing, but it's now on the timeline in 2030, mm-hmm. or it's on the timeline in 2070.
Makes it very complicated.
So, I'm sorry. I'm trying to put a lot of information into a nutshell, and a lot of this is explained in the book.
Yes, no, I understand. I'm just going to say, but it does get
complicated, because it actually each point, each coordinate on the timeline is affecting another coordinate.
Exactly.
And
a lot of variables.
So to answer your question succinctly, yes, it is mutable, and yes, things change. And that's the reason why it's very hard to predict a specific date that something is going to happen. But then that brings you to the point of, well, what's the difference between a possible future and a probable future? And what we've tried to do is we've tried to identify the probable future. And what I define the probable future as, there are many possible timelines that are running parallel to each other. But there is one dominant timeline that we call the probable timeline that is a composite of those parallel or possible timelines. And because they're all running parallel, they tend to shift with, say, one parallel timeline or one possible timeline somewhere down the line becoming the probable timeline. But what we're experiencing really takes place on the probable timeline, which is the central point of reality, or what I'll call the now. Do you understand that?
Yeah, no, it's a good setup, a basis for the understanding of the dynamics of the whole system, because, you know, I guess people have always been confused about that. Well, you know, that's why, you know, people get so in trouble, prophecies. I mean, even Nostradamus, lots of his prophecies never came to be because, you know, no one ever took into the factor of the shifting timelines.
That's exactly right. And someone like Edgar Cayce, who is right much more often than wrong, in saying something's going to happen in 1999, says it in a period when, you know, 20 years later, 1999 is actually 2030. These are things that you kind of have to be aware of.
So why this particular area? Why the Middle East? What's the energy in the Middle East? I mean, is it sitting on portals, stargates, something that there's a conflict over? Why this particular area?
Well, there's several explanations for that. The first
outside
is,
of the fact of it's, you know, oil, gas, gold,
well,
and
but you know, all of those are attributes of really you know what why that's a really energetic area. The area sits on a number of vortexes. Now, vortexes, and I'm sure you know you've heard of Sedona.
Sure.
There are vortexes all over the world. And vortexes are areas, to a greater or lesser degree, where what you think and what you feel is more readily manifest into reality based on what we'll call an energetic portal or a vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sedona has them, and actually, if, I'm sure you're aware of this, if you go to Sedona and you go to some of the vortexes, you have to be very careful about what you think, how you feel, because if you go there and you feel wonderful, you're going to feel wonderful times 100. But if you go there and you feel depressed, or you go there and think something a little negative, it's going to be depression or something negative times 100.
So portals are amplifiers.
Amplifiers, thank you.
Amplifiers, yeah.
Very, very much so. But they amplify in both directions. It's not just positive. It can amplify in a negative direction as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the Middle East is sitting on a number of these ancient vortexes that are very, very powerful vortexes. Now, the reason why those are very powerful vortexes is because of a lot of the ancient history. And when we talk ancient history, we're talking prior to modern history, which in our book really starts around 13,000 BCE. For many historians, starts in about 5,000 BCE. And this is because a lot of the, I have to say, Atlantis was a global civilization. And it existed for a great many years. In fact, Atlantis really existed for well over 100,000 years. And it was a global civilization with very high technology in the same sense that today we have a global culture, in a sense, and a global civilization. And Atlantis was even more so in terms of the culture, in terms of the technology, in terms of really what it was all about. Atlantis had, therefore, even though Atlantis was based in the what today would be, I guess, a continent that no longer exists in the Atlantic Ocean, that is closely related to the Caribbean islands, and actually down to the northeastern part of South America. But Atlantis had global reach. When Atlantis ultimately was destroyed, and I won't get into the details because that's a whole book in and of itself,
sure.
But that the ultimate final demise, let's say, of Atlantis was in 13,000 BCE. But this as typical, didn't mean the destruction of everything all around the world, but it did mean that there was the destruction of a fair amount of the culture, the civilization, and the technology, for the most part, was lost. So what you had happening then were what I'm going to call colonies of people who were living in areas where they had once been very closely associated with Atlantis, such as, let's say, Egypt. And now the actual technology over the course of another, 10,000 years or longer, just vanished. And the uses of these different things vanished. And then it just became sort of mythology. Now, all of this happened, or I should say, a lot of the technological advances that lasted for the longest amount of time after Atlantis was ultimately destroyed, a number of them were in the Middle East. And it gets a little bit more complex. I wish things were a lot easier, but I almost think sometimes if you hear someone giving an easy, two soundbite kind of explanation for these things, then run, because they're totally not getting it. But there was a culture that was an off-world culture called the Anunnaki. Mm-hmm. And they originated approximately, I'm going to say, roughly 50,000 BCE. And they are the group that actually settled in Mesopotamia, in that area, and they had a far reach that, and they had alliances with Atlantis for a time, although there was then a great war that took place, but they had all kinds of technology as well in the Middle East that is buried under a lot of the ancient temples were actually built on these structures.
Can I stop you for just a second? Because
sure.
It seems that with all the terrorists coming in and destroying some of what was the cradle of civilization in this area, and it almost looks like that they tear it down, that they're almost looking for something.
Well, that's actually camouflage. And that then gets us to the story of, just who are these terrorists?
Yeah.
And where do they come from? And if you haven't asked yourself by now, why they're driving Toyota trucks and why they're, where they came from.
We know the U.S. is, a lot of us know, at least the ones who don't listen to the mainstream media know that, that the U.S. and CIA
right.
is the instigator behind ISIS.
They really were. And, the thing is, It wasn't that they were out to do anything. I can't say that they weren't out to do it, since something exceedingly harmful is what I was going to say. But they weren't. They did have a plan, and their plan was that they were going to disrupt the entire region in order to allow Israel some breathing room. And a number of other economic considerations with regard to oil and gas and what have you. And so they actually formulated this group in order to act as a kind of cover for some of the covert activities that they were doing. Now, what you're seeing happening is an understanding that it becomes very, very clear when Russia can step in and practically destroy them in 1 week after the United States and the entire Western coalition has been there saying that they're going to destroy them for over a year, that something must be going on there.
Yes, yes.
Why is that happening?
Deductive reasoning should bring most people to that conclusion.
I would hope so. But essentially what's going on, though, was that this was a cover, but now, in a certain sense, all bets are off, even though you have what I'm going to call the Western cabal, meaning sort of Europe, North America, and what have you, that coalition, in a high disarray right now, not understanding what is happening because another group has stepped in to curtail their activity. Now, I'm sure unbeknownst to all of them, I don't think anyone is trying to start World War III, but unbeknownst to them, they are actually fulfilling so many different prophecies, like you were talking about, on the way, that they are really creating all of the vehicles for this actually happening. And as we describe in the book, this does originate in that area, that there will be an alliance that consists generally of Russia and China and a number of other states that step in. And this is going to then cause a certain time of kind of uneasiness while the Western covert activities start to reformulate together with these fundamentalists, what we'll call the Islamic fundamentalists, and then a second wave will be created. The second wave that is coming, and coming very shortly, conceivably by 2020, is the wave that actually will start the World War III. And I shouldn't actually even say that, because the truth of the matter is World War III has already started. It's just not being called that. And it probably never will be cited in that particular way. But it actually has already started. But the actual declarations, the actual world conflict really begins in about the period of 2020. Now, it comes on the heels of an economic recession that rivals the recession that was felt in the West in about 2008 and 2009, that, according to our indications, takes place about 2017 to, at the latest, 2019. That recession will be very, very difficult, but it will not be the total collapse that everyone is talking about. However, that recession will be the reason why, in an effort to distract people's attention from the severe economic downturn that takes place, that the adventurers, meaning the Western covert activities, will reignite what is happening in the Middle East, and that in turn will, in an attempt to divert the public attention, will really start what is known as the War of Wars, or the Great World War. That conflict ultimately will lead to a number of different things. We talk about a lot of them in the book. They're not it's not a happy time by any means.
Tell us about the nuclear component of it.
The nuclear component will very much so be there, according to our information, that the people that you don't think have nuclear arms already have them. They're really just waiting to use them. They will use them for the first time in that 2020 to 2025 period, and it will be used throughout the Middle East when the whole entire area and region is engulfed in this war. You have to understand that it does become, in a certain sense, a kind of crusade on the part of the West, because when all of this transpires, most of the Islamic nations will begin to side with each other again, and they will come to the aid of others. And you see that actually happening even now with Saudi Arabia coming to the aid of ISIS and making statements and running off to meet with the Russian defense ministers saying that they will protect the area. Well, that's really what's going to transpire, and then we'll pull everybody in. But again, it appears as though there will be sort of a calming in the storm. And when you actually see, and when I say this, I don't mean that it will end. I mean that it'll just slow down, and you'll hear about this here and this there and this here and this there. But when you actually see the recession, another great recession that happens in the West, that's when you want to be aware that something else is coming that is very large, because that will be something that Western governments are going to want to divert the public from, and they will do so through a war effort. And when the nuclear devices are used in the Middle East, that will then be the beginning of pretty much the end. There will be devastation throughout the Middle East, and it's at that particular point that even though you really can't say that there are any winners or losers at all, but it's at that particular point that because of what has happened, a great many countries in the West, in Europe and the United States, will find themselves in severe economic turmoil. It's at that particular point that most Western economies will collapse, and certainly at that particular point, if the dollar hasn't collapsed by 2019, it will collapse ultimately and completely by 2025. And what you see happening in the during this conflict, this great world conflict, if you're talking about just the United States, you will see the United States start to become much more regionalized. And you will see that there are going to be states and regions that form, despite the fact that there will still be a federal government. And those regions, say one of them is the New England region, one is the coastal Pacific region. There's a region that is in around the Chicago area. Another region that's down in the Texas area. Those regions will kind of begin to have their own currencies. They will actually, by the end of the 2020s, will actually have their own militias and armies for protection. And it's really the period from the end of that great war to about the 2030 period when the U.S. federal government collapses and is replaced by these regionalized powers that are in North America and particularly in the United States. The lead up to that will include nuclear devastations that will take place in a number of cities in Europe. And it's at that particular point, again, towards the end of that great conflict, so we're talking towards the 2023 to 2025 period, when Rome will be destroyed, when Paris will actually be destroyed. And then after that...
And who's
those
destroying them? There's going to be a
real draw in terms of who wins this war, because there really won't be any winner. And the bombs are going to be at that point in the hands of terrorists. Now, for the most part in Europe, the nuclear devices that are going to be used appear to be used by Islamists who are attempting throughout this whole entire period, almost as guerrilla fighters, to invade all different parts of, you know, Africa, down into India, into Europe. In the United States, on the other hand, those from the information that we received, those nuclear devices that are used, I guess what they call dirty bombs, are devices that will be used by covert factions that are either trying to finally break the back of the federal government, which they ultimately will, or are attempting to hold certain regions hostage. All of that will be done by the 2030s, but at the same particular point, where you find yourself during this conflict is going to be very important in terms of how you live and what your future and the future of your family, future for your family, will hold. There are going to be regions in the United States that will be prosperous. And let's say, as an example, the Union of the New England States will be a very prosperous area. And they will have their own currency and they will have their own militia. But there will be an important and gigantic refugee problem, because from other states that are not as successful in having alliances or having economic strength, when the federal government actually collapses, there's going to be a divide between the haves and the have-nots in North America. When that happens, ultimately that will lead to the Second American Civil War. And the Second American Civil War starts when these different poor regions essentially become like terrorists in a certain sense. Certainly they become raiders trying to actually attack these various prosperous regions in the United States. Now, the problem with that is that when that happens and when that becomes a civil war, many of the regions of the United States at that point, the regional states, the regional unions that are successful, will by that point have made alliances with various other governments around the world. And just as currently the United States tends to have a role as the world's policeman, or so they say, at that particular point, the world's policeman will be Russia and China. So when the various regions of the U.S. that are prosperous, that have bonded together, make alliances with those various countries for protection, they will call on them to actually police these rogue states that are pretty much the Midwest and Southern and some Western states.
So what you're saying is they would be calling in Russia and Chinese forces on our soil.
Exactly. And then when this really gets intense is these raids and skirmishes that are happening will actually start to cross the borders into Canada and Mexico. Now, Canada and Mexico, even though there is an attempt to create one North American Union that fails, they will remain fairly intact, but they will really also have great economic hardship because of joining with the United States in the Great World Conflict. But they ultimately will remain as nation states and will have alliances, political and military alliances, with Russia and China. In particular, Mexico will have an alliance with China, and Canada will have an alliance with Russia, and Alaska, at that particular point, the populace of Russia at that point will have already voted to revert to become part of Russia. So because of that, the Canadians make an alliance with Russia for military assistance. And as soon as these skirmishes start spilling over into the border, over into Mexico and raiding from the north into Canada, Canada and Mexico will both call on their military alliances, the Russians and the Chinese, to assist them.
Let's talk a little bit about Russia, because this is kind of interesting.
Okay.
And you know, our war propaganda machine has been, you know, heavily in gear, you know, big bad Russia, when actually a lot of us think that, okay, Russia's getting in there and getting the job done that we refused to do or didn't do because we had other ulterior motives going on. But Russia, you know, I look at Putin, and, you know, he has changed and since his KGB days. And can you talk a little about that? I think originally I asked if this was the same Putin or if he has had some type of awakening.
He definitely has had an awakening. The awakening was caused by a near-death experience that he had. There was an attempt to assassinate him that was done by Western covert operations. And it was that period that really woke him up.
This had to be March of 2015 when he disappeared, correct?
Roughly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that woke him up to the fact, prior to that, he was content, and Russia in general was content, to sit back and to allow the, I'm going to call them the Western cabal, to really do what they wanted to do anywhere as long as they left them alone. So you could say, in a certain sense, that there was an alliance between the Western cabal and those factions in China and Russia that are equivalent to them, and let's call them all the Illuminati, just for convenience sake. They're called other things, obviously. They're not the same people. But there was a general world alliance of the Illuminati moving towards one world, a one-world state and one-world government. When this happened to Putin, this woke him up. And this woke him up to the fact that, in his mind, any treaties that existed, and I'm talking covert treaties, secret treaties that existed between the secret government of the United States, the secret governments of Western Europe, and the government or secret governments of Russia and China, was now null and void. It's at that particular point that he made the decision, in a certain sense, fulfilling his destiny as well as Russia's destiny, to step in and be on the side of, I hesitate to say right, but in a certain sense, to be on the side of protecting the interest of himself and his people from the outside interference and from the covert activities that they knew have been going on for ages and ages. It's a very interesting story because after the Great World Conflict, by approximately 2050, there is something that emerges in the world that is called the Eurasian Enlightenment. It is led by Russia. And what is ultimately going to happen is that even though Russia will be very much involved at first in an alliance with China, in an alliance with Iran, in an alliance with various allies in the Middle East, Russia ultimately will, midway through, realize what is going on and will step back and will attempt to protect itself through neutrality. Now, that neutrality that takes place when Russia does that actually insulates Russia from complete devastation caused by the Great War in the manner in which the rest of the world will be devastated. As a result, from about 2030 to 2050, Russia goes through an awakening and a kind of enlightenment that is going to, by the 2050s, make it the center of all culture, all enlightenment, all intellectual thought, And believe it or not, even in terms of their kind of, you know, hardcore fundamental views that they might have currently with regard to social differences and social things, ultimately Russia will transform itself and will lead the world in a kind of cultural revolution that will take place after 2050. And Russia essentially will be the center of this, Eurasia in general, for approximately the century to come.
Wow,
what makes it very interesting is the fact that we don't like to talk in terms of a Christ figure and an Antichrist figure. You know from the books, and you mentioned the system lords. We prefer to talk about them in terms of what I call the system lords. Now, the system lords, these are not actual people, but these are avatars who are ninth dimensional beings who incarnate in lifetimes at lower dimensions in order to create opportunities for growth in various lower dimensions. So someone like a Christ, someone like a Jesus, would be what they term a spiritual system lord. A Buddha would be a spiritual system lord. Then there are physical system lords. The physical system lords basically they adhere to the domain of changing the geopolitical structure of the world. So they tend to be various world leaders, scientists, people who are changing geopolitical stature, whereas the spiritual system lords are more the enlightened gurus, the artists, the cultural people, and what have you. And it's hard to generalize because you can't be that specific about it, because sometimes someone that you think would be a physical system lord dealing just with geopolitical issues is actually a spiritual system lord and vice versa. But to make a long story short, it's at that particular point that a spiritual system lord, again, if you prefer a Christ consciousness soul, will emerge out of northern Turkey and Eurasia, who will actually transform the spiritual and philosophical thinking of Russia and Eurasia. And really, essentially, that will be the second coming of Christ. And the Eurasian Enlightenment, that essentially is that part of the world, will be what is prophesied as kind of a new age or a new golden age on Earth. Now, the reason why this is a little bit difficult is because this occurs as pretty much two-thirds of the world lies in ruin. If not from political strife, if not from economic strife, if not from the war, then certainly from the cataclysms that have occurred in terms of natural disasters, which then leads us to a whole other story with regard to manipulation of the weather.
Yes.
And some of the what we call the unnatural natural occurrences.
But before we get into that, let's finish up on the.
Okay.
You said this sort of Christ coming, second coming of Christ figure would catapult into this whole new Enlightenment Eurasian. But what about the? You said there's obviously some avatar system lord who has to take on the path of the sort of Antichrist figure, even though it might be a highly evolved figure, to put in place other things for our learning process. And where do you see that person or that entity coming from?
Well, that from what we've seen, that figure has already appeared. Now, again, it's very difficult to talk in terms of you know, one person is the Antichrist and one person is the Christ figure. Because the system lords have many, many incarnations. So you can have a number of different physical system lords and spiritual system lords incarnated on Earth at the same time, doing different things. I don't want to mention any names of who might be what, because then, you know, that gets a little tricky.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, what you could say though is, and one in particular who really very much was a physical system lord who you could identify with the Antichrist consciousness was Osama bin Laden. Now, if you'll recall, Osama bin Laden really kicked off a lot of this, which is the role of an Antichrist. On top of it, and I can't say that I know Nostradamus or that I know the Edgar Cayce prophecies or even biblical prophecies that well, because I really don't, so I apologize. But my understanding is that this figure that would be the Antichrist would actually be killed, and that would then herald in great devastation to the world. And that is precisely what is transpiring. And more importantly, with regard to one world government, with regard to the marking of the beast and all that kind of stuff from biblical prophecy, it was Osama bin Laden and what transpired around him and instigated by him that caused great fear in the West, that began what we'll call the beginnings of the police state in the West, where everyone was in a state of fear and everyone suddenly needed to be categorized and needed to be watched over and needed to be marked, so to speak. So in that particular sense, from our understanding, that physical system lord, Osama bin Laden, the Antichrist if you prefer, is the one who really kicked this all off in conjunction with, you know, sort of whoever was helping him from behind the scenes.
Yes, that's another story.
Yeah, but again, remembering that the people who were helping him from behind the scenes were instrumental in creating a lot of the fear in the West.
Yes.
And really then started the whole momentum towards the police state and one world government, which essentially fulfills that prophecy when seen in that particular way.
Can we expect any help from, you know, the cosmos, any extraterrestrial help in any of this?
Well, there's a couple things to remember with regard to this. The first is, if you are someone who finds this whole entire process and what you're seeing as being just insane and want nothing to do with it, you're probably someone who is preparing to cycle off. If, on the other hand, you're someone who is waving your Bible and who is a fundamentalist in your thinking and want everybody to think just like you, you're probably going to be content and probably going to want to continue on in third dimensional existences. Now, there's no good or bad or right or wrong, and I'm certainly not going to condemn anybody or say that this group is better than that group. But what you do have to kind of look at is the fact that there will be those who want to continue on in the third dimension, who are younger souls. Now, you have to remember, younger souls, baby souls, their philosophy is me and other me's. They want everybody to be just like them, which defines.
We've certainly seen an epidemic of that lately.
Yeah, it's what defines most religious fundamentalists or just fundamentalists of any nature in general. But those people are going to want to continue on in third dimensional incarnations, and they're probably going to continue on in the timeline. Mm-hmm. Those who are not interested in that, those who are not racing off to start the next crusade, and who really find it appalling, who would prefer peace and would prefer to let people just live in peace, they're probably going to be the individuals who are in the process of cycling off of incarnations and moving on to incarnations in the fifth dimension. Now, this
talk,
in no
talk
way
to us
implies,
about that. What's that
well,
like?
Let me say one thing first, because this is, I don't want to imply that we should just let someone come and run over us and take us to the gas chambers. But what I am saying, because truth is truth, and you do have to. Everyone has their own goal and their own mission and what have you. What I am saying though is that there are going to be pockets in the world of places and people who will come together, who are going to be more fifth dimensional in quality and in nature. Their resonance will be different. And there are going to be places in the world that will fundamentally be third dimensional in nature, where people are doing eye for an eye and where there's karmic balancing going on and where they're gaining growth through all of these, what we would consider horrific opportunities. Hopefully, the good news is that if you are cycling off of incarnations, if you are of a higher resonance, if you increase your vibrational energy so that your vibrational signature is higher, you will be cycling off over the course of the coming how many decades and will not be returning to a lifetime in this present third dimension. Now, the reason I mention that is because I mentioned before that there's pockets in the United States that are regional alliances where life will actually be quite good. I think you're fortunate that you live in California, and because the coast of the Pacific is certainly one of those places that and you see it happening right now. The state of California is just very progressive in terms of what it's doing politically and socially and culturally. And there will be pockets like this throughout the world where those of a higher resonance of like mind will tend to gather to continue on at least for this lifetime and potentially even for another lifetime or two, because the current ascension period doesn't end until 2250. So there is about another 225 years or more of potential lifetimes in those particular realms.
And that's assuming that California doesn't have a big one, right? The big earthquake, right?
Well, the natural cataclysms is a whole other chapter in the book, and that is a very, very difficult thing. And I guess we talked about it.
Yeah, we don't have to get into that right now because I know that is a big area. But,
there are many, many things that will happen worldwide with regard to natural disasters, particularly in North America as part of the bankrupting of the federal government that will take place between now and 2030 that are fairly substantial. We have not seen that California is one of them, although there will be certain losses and there certainly will be flooding, particularly with regard to Southern California, to Baja and that area. And it will be problematic, a bit problematic also in terms of some areas of Northern California up to Seattle. But for the most part, that Pacific Alliance or the Pacific Union that's in the United States will be very, very prosperous and a good place to live. The major devastation that will take place in America over the course of the coming 50 years will take place in terms of the, I think they call it the Yellowstone Cauldron.
Oh, supervolcano.
And that, yeah, the supervolcano. And that will be very, very problematic in terms of one thing that happens in the United States that is going to be very devastating and very difficult.
Well, I know geologists have been predicting that that you know that if that blew, that it would set up a like a nuclear chain reaction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it doesn't destroy the whole continent by any means, but certainly a lot of what I'm going to call the rogue states who really don't have any alliance in those particular areas in the West, it will be very difficult for them, very problematic. It's interesting in that when that actually does take place, it's part of the reason why there is a mass exodus from those various regions of people trying to get into places like the Pacific Alliance or the Chicago Alliance. And those migrations are going to be very, very difficult because these unions are not going to be friendly, and they will actually turn them away. In fact, they will actually become violent. And it's at that particular point that in great part this second civil war starts because of, like I said, the haves and have-nots. And when they come into conflict with each other, that will unleash the civil war that we were talking about.
Any of these new technologies, these new energy technologies, and you know the that are coming out. Now I know the Keshe Foundation just this week on October 16th is getting ready to unveil plasma energy unit technology for the World Peace Conference to get us off the grid and so forth. Are any of these really? Do you see any of that coming to fruition, and these people not being knocked off? You know,
these technologies exist already, and they have for quite some time.
But they're all covertly used.
They've all been completely squelched. They've all been completely kept quiet by the so-called powers that be. The good news is that the Eurasian Enlightenment that takes place really is the place where these technologies are launched and where they really take off. So now we're talking after the 2030 period is when they truly become significant and are used like they never were used in the past. Unfortunately, until then, there's still factions that will be fighting them. And truthfully, it is after 2030 that they become important and pretty much make all other systems obsolete. Certainly the system of using fossil fuel and to a certain extent even solar power will become obsolete based on much of that technology.
So although things may look like they're being launched now, it will take a while for it to seep into the main structure.
It'll take a while for it to seep into the main structure, but also it'll take a while for it to be allowed to be visible in the main structure.
Yeah.
And that will ultimately take the disintegration that will be caused by the Great Conflict, because it's after that all bets are off. Those cabals that are essentially running everything in a covert manner are decimated and are completely gone at that particular point.
So that's what it'll take to get those guys out of the picture for any of this stuff to come really forward and see the light of day and actually be integrated into our world. Now, I know I've asked, and I want to get back to this one, about fifth dimensional Terra. You know, what did you see? What is that like? I mean, is there any...
Fifth dimensional Terra is it's actually a fascinating place, and it's an interesting part of the book, and I'm really happy about it because it does end our book with all of these challenging times. You know, we talked about this. I really truly didn't want to just be giving prophecy that was negative and scaring people. Because the real objective here is for people to understand that things happen for a reason, that it's not accidental, and that you'll be in the right place at the right time, depending on your goals and your growth and what have you.
Just trust in that, yes.
Yeah, and you really need to. The information about Terra, though, and what life will be like on Terra, I think really does open you up to some of the potential. It truly does appear that many of the myths and a lot of the talk about the golden era for human angelics, although there will be that element of it in the third dimension with regard to the Eurasian Enlightenment, truly most of that mythology is reflective of what life is like on fifth dimensional Terra. Now, it needs to be understood, it doesn't mean that it's all fun and games on Terra, particularly with regard to the galaxy at that particular point. And this gets very complex, so I really...
Well, I imagine there'll be a new set of learning lessons in fifth dimensional space for us.
it definitely is. I mean, I'll start by saying that in order to incarnate on fifth dimensional Terra, a human angelic has to be of a certain consciousness and a certain higher vibrational level. And when I say a human angelic, I mean your soul matrix. I mean your soul, of which you are a part, has to be at a certain vibrational level in order to be able to incarnate and maintain a physical structure in the fifth dimension. So that's how you start. The interesting thing about Terra, what I think is probably the most interesting thing, is that because of the nature of the fifth dimension, all Terrans are, in a certain sense, and for that matter, almost all beings in the fifth dimension are telepathic in nature. There is no need to have an internet on fifth dimensional Terra. There's no need to...
So basically, souls will not be going around with iPads and iPhones in their hands looking down
And oddly enough, from what they've told us, most of what you see appearing here now is kind of their training devices. So the understanding, having the concept that there is a bank of consciousness somewhere like an internet, but on Terra and in the fifth dimension, you get trained in this a bit before you cycle off in the third dimension, but in the fifth dimension, you'll actually be telepathic and, be able to actually tap into that bank of information. What's more important, though, is that imagine this lifetime, if you were able to immediately, intuitively know your life mission. Imagine if you were immediately able to understand your life purpose, and not only your own life purpose, but the life purpose of every individual that you meet.
Wow.
Life would be totally different, and this is the case on Terra. Because of it, Terrans tend to be much more aloof. They tend to be totally non-judgmental, because they understand everyone's life purpose. They understand what you're going through and what your life is all about and what you're looking for in this particular lifetime, then everything is okay, right? And they tend to be very oriented towards doing whatever is related to their life purpose. So an added facet of that is, if you know what your life mission and your life purpose is all about, you can spend your whole entire lifetime doing that. So Terrans generally tend to be much more geared towards fulfilling their soul purpose, which is far more satisfying, understanding how to do it in a positive nature rather than experiencing it through challenges. And this tends to be the kind of, the starting point of life on Terra.
Well, some of our listeners might think, well, what is the difference between that and life between lives, you know, in spirit form?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. In the System Lords and the 12 Dimensions, the basic structure of the universe was described. Each one, there are 12 dimensions, and what we're going to call 12 universal dimensions. And each universal dimension is segmented into 12 sublevels. Now, we happen to exist in the third universal dimension at the third sublevel of the third universal dimension. The second dimension is present and we see it, and the first dimension is present and we see it, meaning talking about the sublevels.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the fourth sublevel and the fifth sublevel, and even higher up to the 12th sublevel of the third universal dimension, that is what is identified as the astral plane. When a soul is in between lifetimes, or even an individual, their energy and their energetic body transitions to higher sublevels, i.e. astral planes, in a certain sense, waiting for either a new incarnation in a physical form in the third sublevel, or they get higher and higher in the sublevels, waiting for the moment of ascension, at which point their soul can ascend to the next universal dimension.
So when you talk about us going to the fifth-dimensional Terra, are you talking about fifth-dimensional sublevel in the third universal dimension, or are you talking about the fifth universal dimension, like maybe one sublevel in that?
In the fifth dimension, you would be incarnating at the fifth
sublevel.
The fifth sublevel, exactly.
Okay, got it.
In the third dimension, we'd be incarnating at the third sublevel with the higher dimensions. But the fifth dimension does have the 12 different sublevels.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting about it is that the first universal dimension, second universal dimension, the universal dimension seems to be composites in series of threes. And the reason why you don't go to the fourth universal dimension is because the fourth, fifth, and sixth universal dimensions are a composite.
Ah.
And so you go to the fifth dimension because the fourth dimension, just like on Earth, in the third dimension, the first universal dimension is essentially present. And these are almost like the Russian dolls inside of dolls.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially sort of how it works with higher dimensions always able to see lower dimensions, but lower dimensions unable to see higher dimensions. That's why it's possible.
It's very fractal sounding to me.
Well, yeah, there you have it. Exactly. And this is the reason why a six-dimensional being essentially knows that there is a third dimensional being in much the same way that you know that there's a rock, but you don't experience the life of the rock. You can't understand it. You just see it as a rock, and you can break it, chip it, throw it, do whatever you want with it, but it's a rock. And it's the same thing for higher dimensions, so that a higher dimension being knows of your existence, but really can't experience what your existence actually is, and generally doesn't interfere with or attempt to interfere with lower dimensions. Now, there are some issues with regard to some alien soul, some alien soul beings from higher dimensions attempting to bleed through, attempting to come through into lower dimensions for their own purposes. These generally tend to be souls that are related to service to self orientation, and they do so for whatever reasons. And I won't get into it now, it's very complex, but there's a really interesting chapter in the System Lords, I believe it's chapter 10.
Yes, that's a great book.
Thank you.
It's one of those books you have to read a couple times, right? It's so complex.
Yeah,
it's dense with information.
It is one of the things, this is not beginner material.
No.
I mean, this
that's
truly
why I said that.
Is...
I've never come across anybody who's been as detailed and as so it was dense with specific information that you don't read anywhere.
Yeah. That's kind of why I said, if you come across somebody who's just telling you kind of real basic stuff, run because they really don't get it. Because, from what we've seen, honestly, Kathy, it is so complex. The universe is so multidimensional. Everything that happens is so multidimensional that it's a little bit hard to actually kind of roll it out in a soundbite or in a nutshell. We try, and even the books, the books are very complex, and you really do have to read them and then read them again and then think about it. I have people who tell me that they have to read two pages and then stop and think, and then they have to read two pages and stop and think. But it's because this is not primer material. This is the next generation of material for, I think, the people who are attracted to this information are, people like yourself, people who are have a higher resonance, have a higher vibrational energy, have a higher consciousness, truly are sort of attracted to the information because it resonates, because they themselves are of a higher vibration.
And we're all here to try to figure it out. We want a deeper understanding of all these the mysteries of life and our existence and our evolution.
Well, I certainly agree with you, but not everybody. I definitely agree with you, but my experience has been that there are some people who just really,
what do they say? A life not examined is not a life worth living.
Yeah, not interested.
That's right. I don't understand those people that aren't curious about, our higher or deeper origins. But but everybody's as you say, everybody is evolving at a different level. You and I were once at that level ourselves.
That's right. No, they are evolving at their own speed. And like I say all the time, there's no good or bad or right or wrong about it. There's no such judgments to be made. Things that are happening because they're opportunities for growth. Some people need them and some don't. The people who need that opportunity for growth will be attracted to it and will run and jump in its arms. The people who are not will be hesitant and will basically, not want to have anything to do with it. And for the most part, generally, because you do create your reality, they will create a reality that steers them clear of that. I'm constantly amazed because I knew people like this in World War II. We were all taught how devastating and horrible and awful it was, and it certainly was. But I have met people, not just one, probably at least three, who grew up in the midst of it in Berlin, who have absolutely no recollection of anything happening around them. And, towards the end it was a little hard for a short period, but when they talk to you about it, it was really no big deal, and then it was over and everything was fine. and you have to wonder, how does that happen? How does someone in the midst of this turmoil, who is standing next to someone else, absolutely have nothing happen to them, nothing happen to their families, see nothing, hear nothing, and then the other person who's standing right next to them has every conceivable, awful, horrible, terrible thing happen? And, this is really, certainly it's perspective, but I think it's more than perspective. I think it relates to your resonance, it relates to your vibrational quality, and what you're actually creating, what you need to have happen in terms of your mission in life, and what opportunities you choose to have happen in order to fulfill that mission. And I think that's really what's going on. Now, the same thing, that's one thing I want to say. a lot of what we've talked about sounds very terrible, and it is. It's very difficult, very challenging things. But it doesn't mean that everyone has to take part.
It also doesn't mean
that life ends. It doesn't mean that just because the dollar collapses or this or that, that suddenly just everything stops.
Life goes on.
Yeah,
you know, we've had, all through our history, we've had terrible things happening in other parts of the world. And sometimes it touched us in profound ways, and sometimes it only maybe influenced our little world a little bit, you know.
That's right.
So everyone is going to experience this differently, and I think we have to remember that we all chose to be here during this time, and some as maybe souls as just observers of the rest of our brethren, how we're going to evolve together and work through this, because we are all in this together.
Certainly there are opportunities for growth. I think one of the biggest one is if you are going to choose faith or if you're going to choose fear. When I say faith, I don't mean religious nature. I mean in terms of, are you going to believe in yourself? Are you going to believe in the universe? Are you going to kind of hold fast in terms of your truth? Or are you going to fall and descend into fear, at which point you lower your vibrational energy, and at which point you probably will attract the things that you fear?
That's the key. That's the key. If you allow yourself to fall into the fear factor, then you will attract more experiences that are in that realm.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So keep that in mind, everyone out there listening.
Yeah. One of the hardest things about the times that we're living in is the extraordinary effort that is being made throughout the world, but particularly in the West, to make you fearful.
Yeah.
And it's almost we just get hit with it constantly. Fear this, fear that, fear this, fear that. Well, you know, you have to wonder, is that by accident? Because don't forget, if you are in a state of fear, you lower your vibrational energy, you lower your consciousness, you have a much more difficult time raising your energy and raising your consciousness, and at that particular point, you really are going to need several more incarnations in a particular dimension, because you have lowered your resonance and lowered your vibrational quality to the point where you're not ready to ascend. And I have to question, especially based on the information that's been in the books, how much of that is accidental and how much of that is truly orchestrated by certain, let's call them alien souls, that tend to be orchestrating this in order to block ascension for a good many souls, particularly human angelic souls, to a higher dimension.
So that's something that I think this is probably a good place to end it, getting people to think about that, you know, how they want to live through these times and what they want to embrace. And I've just ordered Jean's new book, Timeline Collapse, and I look forward to getting it. Everyone can go to www.essencepath, that's ESSENCEPATH, PATH.com, to look at his four books. They're excellent. They will give you enough to think about for a very long time. And I'm sure I'll have to get you back, Jean, because there's just so much and there's just no way we can do it in a short period of time. But thank you so much for joining us. And if there's anything else you want to plug at this time at the end here, please do or leave us with whatever.
I appreciate it, and it was great talking to you.
All right, everyone. And blessings and light to all of you. Bye.